Morning. Today's daf in the Baba Kama is daf Yud. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lona Zech Nishmas Liba Gavriela Bashmo. We are on the Mishnah on daf Testament Beis. Let us begin. The Mishnah is a little bit of poetry. Normally, you don't associate poetry with damages. I don't know who writes poetry about damages, but the Mishnah is going to sound a little poetic in nature. And the Gemara already made a comment once earlier in this Masechta regarding our Mishnayos. It was authored by Yerushalmi. I don't know what that means exactly, but the Gemara says it, so I'm repeating it. And it may be the reason why the Mishnah is going to sound a little poetic in nature. The language of the Gemara that the Gemara used earlier was that the Mishnayos here use Lashon Kalila. It's a lighter language. I don't know enough about this to really make a super intelligent comment, but you'll see what I mean in terms of poetry. The Mishnah begins Kol shechafti b'shmiraso hichsharti ez nizko. If I obligate myself to guard something, so I then prepare myself for all the damages that are done. Hichsharti b'mitzvah ez nizko. If I prepared myself for just some of the damages, chafti b'tashlum nizko. Kehechsher kol nizko. So then I take upon myself to pay for all the damages that are done, even though I only prepared myself for some of the damages. If you take a look at the very first Rashi, first two Rashis, I should say, in the Mishnah, so Rashi says chafti b'shmir asoshin is chayav to l'shamro, meaning I took it upon myself to guard something. Hechsharti nizko klomar. Rashi writes, what does that mean to say? Im hizik, if I damage, hechsharti v'zimanti osi hezek shalo shamati yafa. Well, because I took it upon myself to guard it, and I didn't guard it properly, so therefore I have to damage. That's how Rashi explained the expression of hichsharti in his kol. Literally, I prepared the damages. It means, Rashi says that, I put myself in a position where I have to pay for the damages. That's one pshat in Rashi. Kach matzasi, Rashi says, that's one pshat I found. Lishna achrina hichsharti in his kol. Alai lachshir ulasakein ez nizko. Or Rashi says another pshat. The hechsharti is not going on me. The hechsharti means I have to make the item that I broke kosher. Okay? In other words, in the analogy of kasher and treif, kasher means good, treif means not good. So I took something which was good, I made it not good, I got to make it good again. So in other words, the Rashi gives the second explanation of hechsharti. I got to make good that which I made not good. Okay, klomar, ani chayev l'shalem. Give me P. Mori, and that's the second pshat that Rashi heard in terms of this language of Ichsharti. So far in the Mishnah, what have we seen? That if I take up on a responsibility of guarding something, so then any damages that are done to that item is upon me. And then. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, we're going to be discussing later in the Masechta. That damages are paid even if it was not negligence, even if it was just an accident. Well, that's coming up later in the Masechta. So, kol nizko, I'm sorry, and the Mishnah made another point, which is that if I do some of the damages, I'm going to have to be responsible to pay for all the damages. Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to have a discussion later this morning exactly what that's making reference to. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Kol nechasim sheim bahem me'ila. Now we're going to be talking about which items, which properties I am going to be on the hook for in order to pay for damages. So, the Mishnah goes on to say that if the Nechasim is not subject to Me'ila, or to put it in terms that you and I generally use, it's not Hektish. Number two, Nechasim Shehein Shal B'nei Bris. They're owned by a Jew. Okay, well, all these statements in the Mishnah are going to be fleshed out in the Gemara. So, we're gonna discuss all these in details. Number three, nechasim hamiyuchadim, items which are specified. Rashi, they have owners. Sheish lam balim, lafuka dehefker shemizak nechasim dehefker pater. If I damage nechasim that don't belong to anyone, I'm going to be exempt. The Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. There we go. Yeah, I see everyone's shoulders shrugging. Good. I say the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. If it doesn't belong to anybody, who exactly am I going to be making payment to? Who am I exempt from paying? There's no owner. Uvechol makom. Now, where the damages take place, so the Mishnah says, could take place anywhere. Chutz merishus hamiyuchadus lamazik. However, if the damages took place on my property, meaning me, the damager, if the damages took place on my property, so then I don't have to pay. The argument is, the Gemara Rashi here brings it down, the Gemara later on will discuss it more. The argument is, it's my property. What are you doing trespassing on my property? Yes, my ox damaged your something that belonged to you, but that something belonged to you was on my property. Urishus hanizak vehamazik. And then the Mishnah says, and also another exclusion is going to be when the damage took place on property that was jointly owned. What exactly does that mean? So Rashi says, stay tuned, we're going to discuss that also later in the Gemara. And when damage is done, so then the mazik has to pay using meitav haaretz, using the best of the properties in order to pay back. That line should sound familiar. That's what we learned in the first Mishnah. That there's a redundancy in the Mishnayos between this Mishnah and the Mishnah that we learned on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. The Gemara already picked up on the redundancy. Okay, so far what do we have in our Mishnah? Some really general basic rules regarding nezek. Basically, what the Mishnah tells us is, I got to pay for the damages. What the Mishnah, however, does do is illustrates a number of situations in which there would be exemptions created in having to pay. But generally, the Mishnah, poetically, is telling us you got to pay for the damages that you've done. Tana Rabbanan, we start with a brisa. We are on the Gemara on Testament base. So let's go over a simple example where I prepared myself for damages. I made myself eligible to have to pay for damages. Sure, let's say I handed either an ox or a pit. Now, you don't hand a pit over. A pit is a hole in the ground. But basically, what you do is you leave the pit in the care, in the responsibility of Chereshot Vekatan. Or a shur, where I put an ox in the hands of a Chereshot Vekatan. So what I did is, we'll get to the payment in a moment, but what I did is terribly negligent. Meaning what I did is I gave something dangerous for somebody who cannot watch it to watch. So what I did is absolute negligence. Now what we're going to be discussing from this point going forward is my financial liability for doing so. So the Mishnah says that so if I leave these items over in the hands of somebody who is either a deaf mute or a deranged person or a minor, people who simply do not have the wherewithal, the cognitive wherewithal in order to guard it, and damage occurs. So the Braisa says, I, the one who left this in the care of Chereshot Vekata, I have to pay for the damages. Masha ain kein ba'ish. However, if I leave an ish in the hands of Chereshot Vekata and damage is done, the ensuing damage is done, I am not financially liable. The question is obvious. The Gemara asked the question. So the Gemara says, contextually over here, let's give a little more detail to what exactly is happening. Are we talking about where the ox that I handed over to the Chereshot Vekata was tied up? And the pit had a cover on top of it. So in other words, I didn't give the Chereshot Vekata I'm saying this by way of an analogy, a loaded weapon. I gave him something that is certainly dangerous, but there was a cover on the pit, and the ox was tied up.
It was contained.
It was somewhat, the danger was contained. So the Gemara says now, as far as the fire is concerned, so I didn't give the child an actual fire, meaning a red hot poker, but what I gave the child is a coal that you could light, but right now it's not currently lit. So the Gemara says, so now if all this is true, so then I don't know what the difference is. Maishna hacha, maishna hacha. So the Gemara says, so if all this is true, so either you're going to be liable or you're going to be exempt. It's going to be one of the two. But I don't understand what the distinction we're making is between, in the case of the shore and the boar, I'm going to be liable. In the case of the fire, I'm going to be exempt. In all three of those scenarios, I gave the child something which is not inherently, impendingly dangerous, but with a little bit of manipulation, it could be dangerous. So either I should be chayav for all three, I should be exempt for all three. I don't understand the split. So the Gemara says, Ela b'shor mutar bar megula. So the Gemara says, okay, so what I handed the child was either an ox that was untied and a pit that was uncovered, and I left both of those in the responsibility, in the care of a child. And again, the child should not be left with such responsibility. Child does not know how to handle such responsibility. So then I understand why I should be obligated to have to pay for any ensuing damages. But now let's follow this to the case of the fire. Gabe eish shal heves. Now, if we're making this an analogous scenario, the fire's got to be a lit fire. So then I don't understand. If the fire is a lit fire and I hand it over to Chereshot Vekatan, I for sure should be liable for any damages that are done. Mashen came Beish, but the Pater, Hamre Shlakish Mishmet the Chizkil, Oshano Ella, Shemasalo Gachalas, Viliba, Avashahavis Chayev, Avashahavis Chayev. So my time in the Habari Hazeka, the Habari Hazeka. And in fact, not only is it counterintuitive, Reish Lakish actually says that if I hand over a child, a fire, a lit fire, and from that point going forward, whatever damages happens from that point going forward, that is upon me. Now, if I hand him something, a coal where he himself has to light, and then the fire is, and then the fire does damage, so then fine, I'm off the hook.
What if the coal is actually lit, but it's going to go ahead anyway?
The Gemara is going to address that in just a moment. So the Gemara says, but if Reish Lakish says very clearly, and he's saying this as if nobody argues, he says, but if I hand the child the fire, I'm going to be liable for any damages that are done. So now, once again, we're back to our basic question. In the Braisa, the Braisa was giving three scenarios. I put in the care of a child either an ox and a pig, and a fire, and the Bryce is making a distinction between the first two cases and the last case. And meanwhile, as we're trying to analyze it, we simply cannot see the difference between the three cases. Either the danger was mitigated, so I should be exempt from all three, or the danger was exposed, and I should be obligated in all three, but I don't see the difference between cases one and two versus case three. La'olam b'shur kasher abor mechusa. So the Gemara says, okay, We're gonna say that the case in the Braisa is where the ox was tied up and the pit was covered. And the only thing I handed over to the child was just simply a coal that was not yet lit. Now, the question that we asked was, okay, they're not imminently dangerous. So what should be the difference? So the Gemara says, sure, darchel and suke, bor darchel and ture. So the Gemara says, because even though they're not inherently dangerous, but the danger, the statistical chance of danger occurring from this point going forward is much higher when it comes to the pit and when it comes to the ox. Because when it comes to the ox is a live animal. And even though I tied up the ox, but the ox can easily become untied based on the fact that it's alive, it's animated, it moves. And as far as the pit's concerned, so even the pit, the Gemara says, I understand the pit is an inanimate object, and the pit was covered, but still, right, the elements and people walking by, meaning there's a good chance that the pit's going to be uncovered. But if I hand a child a coal, and the coal's not lit yet, so it's not imminent that the coal is going to be lit. Yes, you gave him a highly flammable object, but the object itself is not yet on fire. So the Gemara says that's the difference. So Gachelas kam deshavik le ma'amya amya va'azla. So the Gemara says, and in fact, when it comes to the coal, the nature of the coal is that it continues to dim. Meaning, as long as you don't keep adding fuel to the fire, in other words, it's going to just continue to go down in danger, not go up in danger. So the Gemara says, basically, that's the difference between the case of the pit and the ox versus the case of the fire. So the Gemara says, now Rav Yochanan happens to disagree with Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan's of the opinion that if I hand a child a lit fire, again, he's not condoning, and he's certainly not recommending, but just from a financial standpoint, from an obligation standpoint, Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that you're going to be exempt. So now, Now, if that's true, so now, how is Rav Yochanan going to read the Braisa? The way the Braisa reads according to Rav Yochanan is that if it's a lit fire, it's going to be an ox that is untied. It's going to be a pit that's uncovered. So now, Maishnahacho. So the Gemara says, so what's the difference between the cases? Why in the case of the ox and in the case of the pit, you're going to be chayev? In the case of the fire, you're going to be exempt.
Maybe by the fire, it's natural for the kid to stay. Right?
The Gemara is going to give another argument. So the Gemara says, because when it comes to the fire, ultimately, it's the child himself who's going to have to poke it in a particular direction. Meaning, yes, the fire obviously is a danger. Now, obviously, the fire can create tremendous damage, financial damage. But ultimately, and yes, it was incredibly irresponsible of me to hand that fire over to a child. All that's true. But in terms of just the legal definition of when I'm on the financial hook to pay for something, when I handed over the fire to the child, ultimately it's the child himself who had to move the fire in a particular direction, right? Poke it at something. However, when it comes to the pit and when it comes to the ox, so the pit and the ox basically do the damage on their own. I handed over the pit and the ox for a child to take care of. It's not that, and the child obviously was irresponsible, but I should have known that. It's not that the child himself didn't do anything to accelerate the damage. All the child did was just simply remove himself from taking responsibility. And again, because he's a child, he's not going to take responsibility. So that, in the case of the pit and the ox, I'm going to be on the hook because basically the danger was imminent and the child did no contributing factor in order to perpetuate that danger. Tanu Rabbanan, we are now on the bottom of Testament Bays, and here we go. The Bryce over here is going to speak out. Now, I'm sure as we started the Masechta, I didn't formally say the daf at the beginning, but I'm sure at the beginning of the Masechta, we had a basic idea of the various categories of Nezek and the differentiating points between the categories of Nezek. Right? We learned at the beginning of the Masechta, there are four Avos, Dalet Avos Nezikin, there are four main categories of Nezek, and each one of them has their own particular identity. So here, in the course of the discussion we're having right now in the Gemara, we're going to speak out now the different identifying characteristics of each one of these categories. So, we're going to speak now to various stringencies that we find by the pit over the ox over the pit versus the pit over the ox. The Bishur mi Babor, so let's start off with a stringency that you have by an ox over a pit. Sha'ashur mishalem is a kofer, because when it comes to shur, if my ox were to kill a person, right? My ox is a shur hamuad. In other words, every ox starts off as a shur tam. In other words, it gores, but that's very unusual. So the first time it gored, the second time it gored, the third time it gored, so that was unexpected, and therefore I don't have to pay full damages. I only need to pay chatzi nezek. After the ox is gored a third time, it's now what's called a shur hamuad. On the fourth time, when an ox, so now I have to pay nezek shalom. Furthermore, when the ox now not only was a repeat violator of damage, but also was a repeat violator of putting people to death, it killed three people. Now, as we already pointed out, after it killed the first person, the ox already should have been taken to court and already been tried. Okay, but for whatever reason, it wasn't, and it did it a second time, it did it a third time, so now it's a shur hamuad that actually kills people. After that point in time, if my ox kills a fourth person, so then I have to pay what's called kofar. Meaning, it's as if the Torah is saying to me, the owner of the ox, really, I'll tell you what, you're basically, it's not murder in the strict legal sense of the word, but you're a murderer. You were really responsible for the death of somebody. But the Torah, under these circumstances, because I didn't do it with my own hands, and it was my ox that did it, so the Torah allows me a way to pay out of the crime. And that's what the Torah refers to as kofar. So when is kofar paid? Shashur mishalem is a kofar. Only when my ox does damages. And that would not be true regarding a pit. If my pit was responsible for the death of somebody, so then I would not have to pay kofar. So kofar is a payment specific to shur. Two, chai b'shoshim shalavin. If my shor were to kill an eved kenani, so I'd have to pay knas to the owner of 30 shkalim. Straight out in the Torah. Three, nigmar dino asur b'hana. Once the shor is tried in court and convicted of killing somebody, so from that point going forward, the shor haniskal is asur b'hana. You're not allowed to get benefit from it. Machlokas Rishonim, classic Machlokas Rishonim, whether the Isser Hanah is after the Gemar Din or after the animal is actually put to death. Either way. V'darko leilech ulahazik. Now, regarding the shore, that is the nature of the shore, is that it will go forward. Again, it's an animate object, it's a live animal, and so therefore it will seek out to do damage. Masha'en came babor, and all this is true, not, this is all this is not true regarding the pit. Okay, so all these chumras that we have regarding a shur is not true regarding a pit. Next, chumra babor mi b'shur. Now we're going to go in the other direction and note the halachic characteristics, the individual characteristics that we have regarding a pit, which is not going to be true by a shur. Shehabor tchilas yasol nezek. When it comes to a pit, the moment that I create the pit, it is there designed to do damages. Meaning, a shur is an ox, right? When the ox was created, now obviously it was created through reproduction, but when the ox is created, it wasn't its raison d'etre is not so that it could damage. But that's not true regarding a pit. A pit that is made in a rishos rabim, by very definition, is going to create damages. Umuad mitzchilaso. And as a result of that, it is categorized as a muad very from the beginning. Whatever damages the pit does, right from the very from damage number one, I'm going to be on the hook to have to pay full damages. Masha ain't kibbe sure, and that's not going to be true regarding an ox. An ox is only going to become a muad only after the third time. Chomer b'shur mi beish. We're on the very top of Yud Amud Aleph, and we're just going to continue. Meaning, all we're doing now is speaking out all the basic halachic differences between the categories of damages. Chomer b'shur mi beish. Now, shur is more stringent than that of fire. Chomer mi beish mi b'shur, and the fire is more stringent than shur. And let's go through this. Chomer b'shur mi beish. Shur mishalem kofer. Shur has to pay kofar. We've already discussed that. That's not going to be true regarding a fire. In other words, if my fire were to end up killing somebody, I would not have to pay kofar. Why not? Take a look at the Rashi over here. Top Rashi on the Amud, Masha'en Kim Be'ish, Eish Lo Chayev Bo'Sreifas Adam. If I make a fire that kills somebody, so I'm not going to be on the hook. Shahayah Lo Livroach. Because Rashi says, ultimately, even though, again, to a certain degree, obviously, that was incredibly negligent of me to do so. But in terms of the ultimate responsibility of somebody else's death through the fire, so Rashi says over here, he should have ran away. V'im kafasu hamavir chayiv misa v'kim le'med rabbi minei. Now let's say he couldn't run away. Let's say he was in a position where he was tied up. So then Rashi points out, so now I'm not going to pay because what did I just do? I killed somebody. In other words, I made a fire that killed somebody. And then we have the principle of kim le'med rabbi minei. So however you cut it, you're not going to be obligated to have to pay any type of financial payment through the, I guess we would call it in our legal system, the wrongful death of somebody else through a fire. Either he could and should have run away, or he couldn't have run away, and then I'd be responsible as a result of Kimle. I'd be exempt from having to pay through Kimle. That's Rashi. So next in the Gemara. So chomer be'ish mebshur chomer be'ish. I'm sorry. Kover v'chayv b'shloshim shal eved. Sure, I have to pay for the 30 shkalim if my ox was responsible for the death of an eved kanani. If somebody else is eved kanani, I'd have to pay the owner 30 shkalim. Nigmar dino aser bahana. Again, just a repetition, but we're going over all the chumras that one has over the other. If my ox that killed somebody was put to death, the ox is aser bahana. Masul cher shal devekatan chayev. If I handed my ox over to somebody who is not fit to guard it and it does damages, I'm obligated. I know we know that already. We saw that earlier this morning. Masha ein kein ba'esh, and all this is not true regarding the fire. Chomer ba'esh mi b'shur. What are some of the stringencies of a fire that, over that of an ox? She'esh mu'edes mitchilaso, mash'en kemishor. So as far as the fire is concerned, mu'ad mitchilaso, the fire is set to do damages. Therefore, I'm obligated to pay for full damages for any damages that were done, even the first damages that were done by a fire. Chomer bi'esh mi babor. Now we're going to compare a fire to that of a pit. V'chomer babor mi beish, and we're going to do in the reverse as well. Chomer babor mi beish, tchilaso siyaso l'nezek. So once again, the boar, its very inception is there to do damages. If I leave the pit in the watch, in the careful watch, in the not so careful watch of a chereshat v'katan, so then I'm going to have to pay. Masha enkin be'esh, but that's not true regarding a fire. As we already articulated earlier, when I hand over a fire to chereshat v'katan, I'm not going to have to pay. And again, just quickly to review what we saw earlier this morning. Either we hold like Reish Lakish, and that we're talking about where you didn't hand them a hot fire, an actual open fire, but you handed him a coal, and so therefore it's the fire. It's the child who lit it. That's one possibility. Or according to Rav Yochanan, even if I handed him a fire, terribly irresponsible, but I'm not going to be financially responsible because it was the child himself who had to introduce the fire to somebody else's property. A fire is also more stringent than that of a pit. So when it comes to the fire, so the fire travels. And the fire is going to damage, and the fire is going to damage everything. Things that it's fit to damage, and things that it's not fit to damage. But that's not true regarding a pit. A pit does not travel. A pit doesn't go out to do the damage. The pit just simply sits there and waits for the damage to hit in, to hit it. But listening.
One thing is also the shore is like Aish, because Aish, he could have run away. I'm not sure. He could have run away too. Look at a bullfight.
All right, all right.
There comes a shore coming to you.
Last year, my travel to Spain. It happens to be that my trip to Spain coordinated with the bull running in Pamplona. Now, I did not go to Pamplona, and I did not watch the running of the bulls. And
it seems
like the fire is a slow, steady march, and the bull is not. And so maybe that could be the very simple distinction. Okay. We are taking a break now in the Braisa. The Braisa has just been basically rattling off. The Braisa is very systematic. This is more stringent than this. This is more stringent than this. And basically, the Braisa has been playing off the pit, the fire, and the shore. Now, v'listnei chomer b'shur mei babor. Now, the Gemara over here interjects for just a moment because the Gemara says, "I think the Braisa missed something." And look. The ox is more stringent than that of a pit, ashur chayabo, as a kelem, ashenkem babor. Because as we're going to learn later on, the first time the Gemara has mentioned this point, but we're going to spend more time later discussing this, and that is that a shore is going to be obligated for all damage that it does, including kelem. However, that's not true regarding a pit. A pit is only going to be obligated for the damages that it does to people, but a pit is not going to be chay for any damages that it does for kelem. So why didn't the Braisa mention that? That's a very basic distinction. So the Gemara says, "Hamani Rav Yehuda he." So the Gemara says, "Well, the author of the Braisa is Rav Yehuda. The mechayv on this kekelim babor. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that a boar is also going to be obligated for damages that it does to kelim. So e Rav Yehuda ema sefer." So the Gemara says, "Well, if that's what you want to say and you want to put the Braisa in alignment with the opinion of Rav Yehuda, well, let's continue in the Braisa. Chomer bi beish me babor. Sheish darka leiluch lahazik muala chol bein davar harayla bein davar shein harayla mashen kein babor." So one of the things that the Braisa just got done saying is that the fire will consume everything, that which is fit to consume and that which is not fit to consume. But when it comes to a pit, so it only is going to destroy things that it's fit to consume. So what is that talking about? Mashen kein babor, davar harayla. Mainihu, eitzim. And now when it comes to davar harayla, it means wood, meaning fire, obviously. Excuse me. Wood is very flammable, and so therefore fire is going to consume wood. And when it comes to things that are not fit to be consumed and destroyed by a fire, meaning things that are not so flammable, so we can talk about kalim. But if the fire is hot enough and the fire were to destroy the kalim, I'd be financially liable for the damages that are done. Mashen kein babor. So the Gemara says now, that's not true regarding a boar. Regarding a boar, the digger of the pit is only going to be liable for damages that are ra'ila, things that are fit for the boar to damage. Now, Rav Yehuda, now remember, we want to say that the Braisa was going like Rav Yehuda, but Hamar Mechayev Hayy Rav Yehuda on this case, Kalim Babor. But according to Rav Yehuda, you're liable for the pit, for anything that's destroying the pit, including Kalim. So the Gemara says, so doesn't sound like the Braisa is going like Rav Yehuda. Elalolam Rabbananhi. So, the Gemara says we're going to backtrack and we're going to say that the author of the Braisa is the Chachamim. Now again, the problem with that is the notable omission in the Braisa of why didn't the Braisa mention the the kelim. Right. So why didn't the Braisa mention the distinction of kelim? So the Gemara says Tana Vishayer. The Gemara says, okay, look, the Braisa is giving us the basics. The Braisa is not going over every permutation, every distinction between one category and another category. So the Gemara says, okay, the Braisa left out some categories. Maishai da Haishai. Now you know the rule. In order to construct this argument that the Braisa is not exhaustive, so the Braisa has to have left out not just one, but at least two things. Because if all the Braisa did was just simply leave out one, before Braisa leaving out one case, the Braisa would have written it. The idea that it's only giving us Rashi Prakim, it's only the most basics, there's got to be other things that are left out in the Braisa. So the Gemara says, Shayer Tamun. So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you what it left out. It left out the exemption of something which is covered. Again, an idea which we have not yet seen in the Gemara, we're going to see a little bit later on, and that is that when it comes to a fire, I'll start with an ox. When it comes to an ox were to damage something which was covered, I'm obligated, I'm on the hook, I have financial liability. However, that's not true regarding a fire. A fire, the financial liability of a fire is only for those things which were uncovered, exposed. But let's say, we'll talk about this later in the Masechta, let's say that my fire went and burned down a haystack, and in the haystack was something, was an item, a commodity that was very expensive. So I'm not financially liable for that which is hidden. The reasons why that is, we're going to discuss later on, but it's just simply something that the Braisa didn't mention, and that's what we wanted to hear. That the Braisa left out other distinctions. So the Gemara says, Ibai Sema or La Olam Rav Yehuda V'Dav Hashem Raila Lav Lasui Kelim Ela Lasuye Lichacha Nira V'Sichsicha Avanav. So the Gemara says, or maybe we can go back to our original suggestion, which is that the entire price is going like Rav Yehuda. Now, as far as when we said that the price is going like Rav Yehuda, the problem we have with that is that the price was making a distinction between that which is right, which is that versus that which is not right. Now, if that's true according to Rav Yehuda, your pit, you're going to be obligated for your pit for Kalim that fall into the pit. So what does it mean, things that are right and things that are not right? So the Gemara says, well, we're not talking about Kalim, but rather we're talking about Lichach Nero. It does property damage to your actual property itself. And that would be a fair distinction, even according to Rav Yehuda. Maskel Rav Ashi listening chomer b'shur mi b'bor she'ashur chay b'shur. So the Gemara says, now another question that we're going to ask on the Braisa is that, look, there's another difference as well. That when it comes to the shore, you're going to be obligated for psule hamukdashim. What does that mean? Rashi over here explains that we're talking about a carbon that had a blemish, a physical blemish, and therefore it was redeemed. Once you redeemed an animal that had a physical blemish, so what you can do with that animal, the animal has just a little bit of residual kedusha. It has some leftover kedusha since it once upon a time was a carbon. And therefore, I can eat it, but I can't work it, and I can't shear it. And you cannot do giza v'avoda. Rashi over here points out, shenifta v'nafal b'bor, pater bal habor. Even though I have the right to eat such an animal, the owner of the pit, the one who dug the pit, is not going to be financially liable for damages of the psulim mekdashim. And Rashi over here cites the psukim that teaches us this halacha. Again, we're going to see it later on in the Masechta as well. So, but that's not true. Chay bo shor psulim mekdashim, mashen came before. So another basic distinction, that when my shore damages somebody else's shore, and that somebody else's shore was psulim hamukdashim, I'm financially liable. However, if the psulim mekdashim falls into a pit, I'm not going to be financially liable. So, iyamar bishlam rabbanini, I did deshaya hach. Now, according to the Chachamim, why did the Braisa leave that out? Again, that's very simple, because the Braisa left out a couple of cases. But Iyamar Rav Yehuda Maishar de Haishar. But according to Rav Yehuda, what else was left out in that scenario? So Shari Dash Beniro. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's talking about a case that the animal threshed in the property of somebody else. So. And as Rashi over here points out, if the animal threshed in someone else's property, that is something which is normal for an animal to do. So Rashi says, "Shim dash ashor beniro v'nis kaven lekach sharei ashvarim melumadim b'disha." meaning oxen are basically trained to thresh. That's what one of the purposes, one of the avodas that's done by an ox. Tolada de karenishi kavanas lahazik v'chazal shalem de meinir shekilko. And so therefore, if he did that to the property, so this is something which was expected, and therefore you have to pay for the damages. However, when it comes to a pit, there's no such thing as property damage when it comes to a pit. So the Gemara says, so that could be another distinction that was left out. The Gemara says, yeah, but that wasn't left out of the Braisa. Actually, that was in the Braisa. When the Braisa says the shore goes out and does damage, included in going out is doing property damage. The pit, by its very definition, can't do property damage because the pit's not moving around. So how in the world can the pit do property damage if the pit's not moving around? So the truth of the matter is that was already included in the Braisa. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Sorry, let me read the heading. Hechsharti b'miksas nizka. Okay, so for the first half of today's daf, what the Gemara did is it quoted a Braisa, basically going over the basic distinctions between shor, bor, and esh. You'll probably have noticed that the Braisa didn't talk about Adam. Meaning that, and remember, that was one of the first machloksim that we had in the Masechta, that the first Mishnah, gave the four categories, was Adam included in those four categories? So that was a machlok between Rav and Shmuel in the first Mishnah. In the beginning of the Masech, we talked about reasons why, various suggestions why, if you subscribe to this idea that the Mav in the Mishnah is not Adam, but it's just simply it's part of the Shur family. So then, okay, so you gave reasons, but anyway, this Brisa clearly is also working with that basic thinking that we're talking about not Adam, but we're talking about your property doing damage, meaning you're something. You're right. Your fire, your shore, your pit, but not the person himself. Okay. Next, reading the heading, okay, the rest of today's daf is a lot of fun. It's a good mind teaser in the fact that what we're basically going to be looking now is a scenario in which I didn't do all the damage, but I'll be financially liable for all the damages. Because that's what the Mishnah essentially said. The Mishnah says there could be a scenario where hichsharti b'miksas nizko, I prepared myself for some of the damages, but I'm going to be on the hook for all the damages. So, we're going to be looking now for the rest of today's daf, a scenario in which I was a contributing factor to the damages, and yet I'm going to pay for all the damages. So here we begin. So what would be an example of this? So the Braisa starts off. So the pit was 9 tefachim deep. And generally speaking, we have a general presumption that 9 tefachim is not deep enough for somebody to fall in and die. It's just simply not deep enough. 9 tefachim is approximately... Where should I put it at? I was going to say I was going to be conservative, but conservative over here can go in either direction, right? A tefach is somewhere between 3 to 4 inches. So let's say 3 inches, just for the sake of just us having an idea. So 9 times 3, 27 inches. So we're talking about a little over 2 feet. Okay, again, just I'm ballparking right now. So it's a little bit over 2 feet. It's really not deep. So if it's dug out 9 tefachim, uva achar vishlim al asara, and then somebody comes along and all he's doing now is just digging one more tefach of the pit, ha'achron chayev. So the Gemara says that last person is going to be on the hook for the little bit that he contributed. Whether the ox died, whether the ox was damaged, and nevertheless, he's going to be liable. Udalok Rebbe Detanya Achover Bortisha Uva Achor Vishlam Lasara Achoron Chay Rebbe Omer Achor Achoron Lamisa Achor Shneim Lanezikin. Now, Rebbe doesn't agree with this. Rebbe is of the opinion that as far as death that resulted from from this new pit, from this deeper pit. So then you're right. The last person who dug is going to be liable. But in terms of any nezik that's done, so there's going to be shared responsibility of all the people who dug into the pit. The one who dug 9 tefachim and the one who dug 10 tefachim, they're all going to have a shared responsibility, a shared liability for the damages that are done. Okay, but we're not holding like Rebbe, we're holding like the Tanakhama. So once you go from 9 to 10, that one person who dug out that 10 tefach, so he's going to be solely responsible for both death and damages. Even though all he did was ultimately just dig one tefach. But he's going to be solely responsible. So Rapapa Amar Lemisa V'Divrei HaKol, and according to Rapapa, we're only talking about the responsibility for the death, and then our mission could be going like everybody. Because on death, Rebbe agrees that the last person is responsible. Igad Amri Lema Deloki Rebbe. Now, according to another version, we're going to suggest that it's not going like Rebbe Amar Rapapa Lemisa V'Divrei HaKol. Okay, in the second version, we just simply suggested that it's not going like Rebbe, but immediately we refuted and we said, no, it isn't going like Rebbe, because we're just talking about the responsibility for the death of the animal. Maskav La Rebbe Zer V'Su Leka V'Ha'ika. So now, after having given one example in the Brisa, just one, about where you're a contributing factor to the damages, and then ultimately you're going to be solely responsible for all damages that occur, now the Gemara is basically going to be spending almost the rest of today's daf trying to imagine other scenarios in which you're a contributing factor to the damages, and you should be fully responsible, fully financially responsible for all damages that occur. So the Gemara says, let's go. Let's try to put our heads together and come up with another scenario. The Braisa stopped at one example. Why didn't the Braisa go further? Maser shor lechamisha b'nei adam upasha bo echad mehem v'hizik chayev. So the Gemara says, well, maybe I handed over my ox to five people. One of them was poshea, one of them was negligent, the ox did damages, and so therefore that one person should be obligated. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. Now was that fifth person necessary for the damages? And as a result of his failure, so the ox went down in damage, so he wasn't the contributing factor to the damage. He was the reason why the ox damaged. Ella de Balav Iu Nami Minter. So the Gemara says, well, the truth of the matter is that four people was enough to contain the ox, and truth of the matter is he wasn't needed. So the Gemara says, Micah Ovid. Well, if that's true, then he's not a contributing factor at all. So Maskav Rav Sheshes Va'ika. So the Gemara says, okay. That's not going to be a case. Let's try to come up with another case. Marbe Bechavila. Hechidami. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to talk about a scenario where I added more fuel to the fire. So the Gemara says, the Rambam, by the way, parenthetically, the Rambam doesn't learn the case that way, but we're going to say like Rashi, I added fuel to the fire. So the Gemara says, now, ida balav iu lo azla pshita. Now, if without you adding the fuel to the fire, the fire would have just died out and it would not have continued, so then you're going to be exempt. Ela debalav iu azla. So the Gemara says, well, even without you would have gone. So Micah Ovid. So again, if you're adding fuel to the fire, but the fire would have gone even without you, so then you weren't even a contributing factor. So once again, the Gemara says, I'm going to reject that as well. Maskav Rapapa Va'ika Haditanya. The Gemara says, okay, so why don't we consider the following scenario? Heishi Ashval Saftal Chavalo Shavru. So, right, every time you go into an elevator, so they tell you what the weight limit is of the elevator is. So here you have a bench, and I don't know if there was a note on the bench, but basically five people sat on the bench, and the bench was able to shoulder, to bear the weight of all five people. And then along comes the sixth person, sits down on the bench breaks. Now, ha'achron chayev. So the last person is going to be responsible. So here, it seems like we got it. It seems like we have a case in which the last person was a contributing factor to the damage, and yet he's going to be solely financially responsible for the entire bench. V'amar Rapapa Kigon Papa Baraba. So, and Rapapa gives an example. Now, happens to be a namesake of his. Okay. I guess he likes the papas. Yeah. So the but anyway, Papa Bar Abba was a balbasar. He was extraordinarily large. So so therefore, he clearly exceeded the weight limit of this particular bench, and therefore he was responsible. So Heichidami, I by the way, just I'm saying this Bederech Leitza. Rav Papa himself, you know what he did for a living? Rav Papa was a beer manufacturer. Right, he, in the Gemara says elsewhere that he made a lot of money manufacturing and selling beer. So I would venture a guess that he knows a lot of heavy people. That's anyway. So the Heichidami Ilema Debalav Ihu Lo It Reb Shita. So the Gemara says. So once again, so let's consider what we're looking for. We're looking for, remember, it's a very specific case study we're trying to find. We're trying to find somebody who is a contributing factor to the damage. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider. If without him, so the bench would not have break pshita. Ella debalav iunami itbar. So the Gemara says, well, the bench would have broken anyway without him. So the Gemara says, Maika oven. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, then even when he sits on the bench would have broken anyway. It's just he made it go a little bit quicker, but the bench would have broken anyway. So the truth of the matter is, he's not a contributing factor. So the sof masisa echemetaratza. So the Gemara says, okay, so I kind of hear you, but then remember, the Braisa told us that the last person is going to be responsible. So again, let's choose our path. The last person is going to be responsible. Had the bench not broken without him, and he was the one who was literally the bench breaker. So the Gemara says, for sure he's going to be liable. And if the bench would have broken even without him, so then he shouldn't be liable. So the Gemara says, so how did you understand the Braisa? So the Gemara says, okay, so even though the bench would have broken, but with their weight, with the five, with the original five, so their weight would have broken the bench only after 2 hours. He sits down on the bench, and now based on the stress, it was going to be broken anyway. All he did was just simply accelerate. The Amri Lay Ilav At Habiasvinan Tfe Porta Vikaiman. So therefore, now the arguments go like this. They're going to say to him, look, we would have sat on the bench, and we know we're on the clock, right? And we know we have a 2 hour limit on this bench, so we would have all synchronized our clock, and we would have all stood up and an hour and 58 minutes after having sat down. So, meaning we know that we would have broken the bench, but we also know at what point in time we would have gotten up not to break the bench, and so it's only because of you. Right, with a couple of adjectives thrown in. So only because of you who sat down on the bench, now the bench broke, and so therefore we're going to pin all the blame on you, all the financial blame on you. The lame alahu. So the Gemara says, okay, but why can't he counter like this? Ilav ason bididi lo have a mitbar. So he could say to them, well, look, I understand I'm slightly overweight. I get it, and I understand that I certainly accelerated the breaking of the bench. But you can't pin it all on me. Meaning my weight by itself is not going to have broken the bench. It's only my weight together with you that broke the bench. So I'm accepting responsibility, but don't give me sole responsibility. So lo tzricha de bahadei de samech bahu taver. So the Gemara says, okay. So now what we're going to suggest is the following. This will be the pshat and the braisa. The pshat and the braisa will be where he doesn't sit down on the bench, but he puts his weight on the people who are sitting on the bench. So the Gemara says that's the case in question in the Braisa, and that would be the case in which he would be responsible for to have to pay for the bench.
Pshita. Get up, you mean?
Huh?
People couldn't get up. No, that's
not it. Yeah, well,
so
pshita. Right. So the Gemara says, now it seems to be pretty obvious, meaning, so now he was the one who was responsible for the breaking of the bench. So the Gemara says, Ma'u detema kocholav kegufo dami kamash malan. De kochol kegufo dami. De cholhecha de gufo taber kochol nami taber. So the Gemara says it's just a klal gadol. It's an important basic point regarding the responsibility for damages. And parenthetically, by the way, this can have spill over into other halachic ramifications as well. And that is that even though my physical body wasn't on the bench, and the only thing that I put on the bench is my force, My force in terms of damages is equivalent to me physically being on the bench. So as long as I exerted the force necessary to break the bench, even though I wasn't physically sitting on the bench, I'm going to be financially responsible for the breaking of the bench. So the Gemara says, so that would be a case that the Brisa here is describing, in which he, the person, broke the bench, and he's going to be the one solely responsible. Vesuleka, let's do one more for today. Vesuleka, the Gemara says, let's get to the two dots. The Gemara says, Vahaika Haditai, the Gemara says, let's consider the following scenario. Kausar b'nei adam b'eser makos, v'ein b'vasach, I'm sorry, b'ein b'vasach, z'mein b'zeh achazeh, umes. Cool and paturin. So it's a terrible scenario, but again, we're just looking at the halachic principles. So let's say 10 people hit a person, and whether they do so simultaneously, whether they do so one after the other, so they're all going to be exempt because no one person was responsible for the death of this individual. Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, Omer Bezachrza. Now in this last case, Rav Yehuda ben Becerra disagrees. Where? There were 10 people who hit him, but they did not hit him simultaneously. They hit him successively. So, Acharon Chayv, Meshakiriv, Esmisaso. So, the last one is going to be the one responsible because that was the one who was closest to his death. So, it's like Makeh B'Patish. So the Gemara says, so now we have a scenario in which the person was a contributing factor to his death, according to Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, and he's going to be the one who is responsible. So why didn't the Brisa give that case? So the Gemara says, "B'katalon lo kamari." So the Gemara says, "I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Because the Brisa wasn't dealing with death. The Brisa was dealing with damages. So yes, we, according to Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, we do have a case in death where you're a contributing factor and you're going to be the one solely responsible. But the reason why it wasn't included in the Brisa is because the Brisa was limited to just discussing damages. So the Gemara says, or another very simple way, the reason why the Brisa didn't include that is because this is subject to a debate between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda ben Becerra, and the Brisa just wanted to say things that were not up for debate. Below the Gemara says, V'avu kimna delo karebi, udelo So the Gemara says, but didn't we make the point earlier that the author of the Brisa is not going like Rabbi, although we did make an argument it is going like Rabbi, but didn't we first immediately after the Brisa say the Brisa is not going like Rabbi? So delo karebi uchi rabbanan mukminin karebi Yehuda ben Becerra velo karabbanan lo mukminin. The Gemara says, look, for the Brisa to take a position that is a shitas harabim, that's fine. Meaning, yes, one Tana is excluded from the Brisa, but that's fine. But for the Brisa to adopt the opinion of Rav Yehuda ben Becerra in contrast to the opinion of the Chachamim, that no. In other words, the Brisa will not take a shitas yachid and put it down as here's a basic example, but only works out according to one opinion. That the Brisa is not going to do. So that's why the Brisa didn't give such an example. Okay, so let's quickly recap. We finished the Gemara today. We started the Mishnah on Testament Beis regarding the very basic rules and requirements of being financially responsible. The Brisa, what we spent all today discussing is one, various halachic differentiations between shor, bor, and esh. Each one of them has a stringency and leniency over the other. And the Brisa went through all the different permutations. Two, we discussed what the Mishnah meant when the Mishnah says that I could be a contributing factor to damage, and yet I will be solely responsible. Now the Brisa only gives but one example of such a scenario, where the pit was 9 tefachim deep, I dug the 10th tefach of the pit, and now, even though I was only a contributing factor, I'm going to be solely responsible. A pit 10 tefachim deep is not the same as a 9 tefach deep pit. And so therefore, I'm going to be solely financially responsible. And then the Gemara spent the rest of today trying to come up with other scenarios in which I'm a contributing factor to the damages, and yet I'm going to be solely responsible. And when ultimately, when the day's over, the Gemara went on to explain why it was that the Brisa gave no other example that fits into that kind of category.